Good morning, I'm Christopher Purdy. Once in a great while, they let me cross over to the other side, as it were, from classical music broadcasting to bring you news of the arts and culture in Central Ohio, and today is one of those times. We'll be with you for the next hour, and my guests are Milt Boffman, who is the Interim Executive Director of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, Tim Veach is the Founder and Artistic Director of the Columbus Dance Theater, and we have a debutante today that I'm especially excited about because he's going to bring some new energy to the discussion, as he has been to the community. Steve Geyer is the executive producer of Shadowbox, and Shadowbox opened a new show last night, so I'm going to ask you to give us a little bit of a sketch of what Shadowbox is, where you are, and the new show.
That's a lot to say in a short period
of
time.
Well, go ahead.
I'll give it my best shot. Shadowbox Live, our brand new name, as a result of our new branding process, has taken 21 years to kind of go from a toddler to a very young adult, I'm willing to say, finally. The adolescence was tough, but we feel like we've finally stepped into some measure of adulthood and ready to kind of take our place in the arts community. And in order to do that, we've also spent a lot of time in the last 2 years in particular reaching out into the community to take the sketch comedy and rock and roll and the musicals that we do and begin to find ways to reach into the community, involve more people in the process, attract more people to the shows, and engage students in particular in our workshop series so that they have an opportunity to learn and grow.
Your shows are scripted, or are we talking more Second City here?
This is all scripted, 100%. We use improv in our rehearsal process to find the best moments, but once things are set, they are truly set. The reason for that is very straightforward. Improv is necessarily a hit-and-miss proposition. We feel that it's critical if we're going to ask someone to spend a couple of hours and $30 to give them a product that's as good as we can possibly make, that there's not any real guessing. So we think that we've done a great job with it. We will put it out there, and if it's not great, we'll fix it, and tomorrow night it'll be better.
What's the new show?
New show opened last night. It's called Nightmare at Shadowbox. It is a bit nightmarish. It was terribly nightmarish to produce, but lots of comedy dealing with nightmares in adult lives and the lives of children. Lots of music has been written over the years about nightmares or nightmare scenarios, and so we're performing and producing that music in this particular show.
Tell me about the company, the people one sees and hears on stage, and people indeed that do the work backstage as well. Where do they come from? Where do you find them?
It's an interesting mix. We do a recruiting drive every year where we go to the SETC conference. It's a place where lots and lots of kids that are just recently graduates from college show off what they're capable of. It's about 750 to 800 students. And at that point, we make some selections and make some invitations. We get two or three kids from that particular just gigantic cattle call once a year. In addition to that, we always have an open audition here in Columbus because we really enjoy working with local people. And that means the whole region. We draw from 100 miles in any direction. Those are the types of folks that come to us to audition. Over the years, we've had people – I have several folks that have been with me the entire time that we've been doing this, the whole 21 years that Shadowbox has been around. The average length that people have been at Shadowbox right now is plus 10 years. I have 66 employees, and more than half of them have been with me for more than 10 years.
Now, I know for a number of years you were a presence in the Short North, and it's probably grittier days. It's more downtown kind of days, and you've recently – well, not terribly recently, but you've moved to Easton, mm-hmm. and you're also in Newport, Kentucky. And
right.
Tell me about Easton. What did that move do for you? Did it take away any of the sort of grunge that sort of is fun and can be productive? Was it better? Is it a good move? And tell me about Kentucky.
It definitely took away some of the grunge, without a doubt. When we made the decision to move to Easton, two things had occurred. Number one, we were in that downtown space where we were selling out constantly. We absolutely had to have more space. And number two, nobody else was willing to work with us on a new space. And consequently, when the Easton folks said, hey, we would be happy to work with you, we said, oh, thank God, because somebody kind of needed to step up and be a real partner in that relationship. And the folks out at Easton have been fantastic. Jaromir Steiner really put himself on the line, took a chance at bringing Shadowbox out there. Not that it's cheap. It's still a very expensive place to do business. But he took a lot of risks and helped us make that a reality. So that was important.
Are you getting a different kind of audience?
Well, certainly we draw from the New Albany area. But to be honest, even when we were downtown, Westerville was the number one zip code. So I don't think it's changed us dramatically in that regard. If there's been a significant change, it's that the folks from the downtown area, German Village in particular, don't go to Easton very often. So we lost a large contingent of our loyal fans down there. I also think that, you know, it's a little awkward being on the northeast corner of Columbus. It's not hard to get there, of course, because we've got 270. But some people just feel that the drive for them is just so incredibly long that it's not the best scenario. There's also a reputation issue. You know, if you're going to do a musical like Cabaret, which we did a couple of years ago, it won every award that you can win in this town. And yet it was incredibly difficult to attract an audience. And when we asked people why they were reticent, why they had come to see our typical shows and why they weren't coming out to see Cabaret, it wasn't that the content of the show was strange. It was hard for them to imagine a production of Cabaret in a mall. And I said, well, okay, I can get next to that. I think I would probably have that same obnoxious opinion myself.
It's called creativity, but that's okay. We'll leave that there for a moment, and we're going to ask Tim Veach what's going on with the Columbus Dance Theater. You, too, have your own facility downtown.
Yes, we do.
You're not at Easton yet. Who knows? But you're now, you told me you began next to a gas station.
We did, at the corner of Lane and Kenny behind the Shell station.
But you've moved since.
We've moved. We moved downtown a number of years ago, and we actually also have a satellite space for our school over in Bexley. And we have a lot coming up. We have The String Machine, which is a production that we did first for WOSU-TV a number of years ago, and we've brought it back this season. It'll be the first time we see the whole thing in Columbus in its entirety for several years. And then we take it on a tour to the East Coast, actually, in October. So that's coming up. And then we have the rest of our whole season, our year coming up, Match Girl in December, 10 Cents a Dance February. We have a new production, Courage, which I'm doing with Corinne Fujiwara doing the music, which I'm very excited about, coming up in sort of wintertime. And then New Dance Project, which we do every year, using choreographers from the community and around the country to set new work on the company. So it's full season all the way through to the middle of May.
How many dancers in the company?
Well, this is a big development, actually. We will have 13 dancers in the company this season, and that is a record for us, no doubt about it. We were able to expand the apprenticing part of our organization. We've always had a core of professional dancers, and then we have been able to get some funding together to give stipends to apprentice dancers. So we've been able to really expand. The company is much larger. And we have the returning veterans that we've had for a number of years that people love to come and see. But then we have a lot of new faces this year, which is really exciting.
And Milt Baughman, the Greater Columbus Arts Council, we're listening to two companies that are, well, not necessarily new on the scene. Shadowbox has existed for 21 years, but they are companies that started small, grew, and made their own audiences, and I'd like to say created the need for themselves to exist, which clearly is working. You sort of beam like a proud papa sometimes when we talk about that. What's the role of GCAC with companies like this?
That's a great question, Christopher, because we view one of our most important roles is to help not only individual artists, but emerging art groups as they start to grow, to get their feet through things like technical assistance, sometimes project support, and other educational opportunities that are provided through GCAC to help those groups. And Tim, as very modest as he is, we consider him a poster boy for GCAC. GCAC started to fund Columbus Dance Theater in 1998. And we went through, I think, almost 10 or 11 years where we were annually providing project finance support for Tim and his programs. And then this year, Columbus Dance Theater joined our operating support group, which really represents now 22 organizations in the community that get unrestricted operating support from GCAC. So Columbus Dance Theater, like Mad Labs, other smaller arts groups in the community, we think are a very important constituency. We're always going to support the core foundation organizations in the community because they're important for the community. But those organizations are also strengthened by the smaller groups that are developing in town.
Do you see a correlation between a lousy economy and an increased activity among smaller arts organizations that are working because they have to, because they're just driven to do this kind of work, whether the times are good or bad? Do you see more activity, better activity? Do we get lazy if there's more money? That's, I'm all for more money. Don't get me wrong.
Well, we're all for more money, too.
I'm sure you are.
And kidding aside, I don't have a real good as good a perspective on that as I'd like. I do think we've seen in the last 3 to 4 to 5 years a lot more in the way of collaborations with among arts organizations. And again, Columbus Dance Theater is a great example of that. And what's important there is that not only it adds maybe economic efficiencies, but it also brings together cultural expressions that may not have been worked together before. And I think it's really exciting for the community to have the opportunity to see those collaborations.
Greater Columbus Arts Council, government money, tax money, bed tax. A lot of organizations can't exist without you. What's the marriage between a bureaucracy and garage artists who are growing up?
Well, that word bureaucracy puts me off a little bit, but kidding aside, we think that we can help smaller emerging art groups build their position in the city through funding, through operating support, through technical support, and we're very, very pleased to see organizations evolve that can get to their feet and be vibrant and fiscally responsible organizations.
Is it getting harder?
Oh, I think it's getting harder because funding's harder.
Yeah.
I think funding's harder for everyone. The bed tax receipts, which is our primary source of funds at GCAC, while we're very pleased with the support we get from the City of Columbus, we are vulnerable to the level of bed tax receipts. And last year that was down 14%. So that had a big impact in our 2009 grant-making capabilities. This year we're seeing stability around the bed tax, and that's helped our funding. And we hope we'll see hopefully some growth in that bed tax going forward.
I will say, because I've snooped around your office a few times with my recorder, and you run a lean organization, and people are working round the clock down there.
Well, it's a very interesting organization. While grant making is our primary objective, we also manage and produce the Arts Festival annually in the first weekend in June. And that's done without any public money. So that means we scramble for sponsorships. We scramble to make sure that we're getting the best quality artists to Columbus to be represented in that program. So we've got some big projects on our plate.
I'm Christopher Purdy. Today we're talking about arts and culture here on All Sides Weekend with Milt Boffman, who is the interim executive director of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, with Tim Veach, who is the founder and artistic director of the Columbus Dance Theater, and with Steve Geyer, who is the executive producer and founder of Shadowbox. We will be back in 1 minute to take your calls. Don't go away.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, and it's 77 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19. Showers are possible this afternoon, otherwise cloudy skies, and a high of 78, partly cloudy tonight, and a low of 53.
Support for WOSU comes from Marburn Academy, inviting you to a parent seminar titled When Children Struggle with Reading, Is It Dyslexia? Tuesday, September 7th at 7 p.m. More at marburnacademy.org. On your drive home, get local updates with the award-winning WOSU news team.
You know, eventually your pills and your money run out. You're not out buying pills anymore, you're trying to steal them.
More than half of all Mary Haven patients with a drug problem started out taking prescription pills.
These prescription drugs, in 80 to 90% of the cases of our patients, are synthetic opiates.
Hear the latest in local and national news with All Things Considered on WOSU 89.7 FM.
All Sides Weekend continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Thank you, our producer, Amy Jurevich. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're back to talk about arts and culture in Central Ohio. Give us a call. Join the conversation, 614-292-8513. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. You can also find us on Facebook. Again, 292-8513. We have a call already. This is from Brendan from Mad Lab Theater. Hello, Brendan.
Yes. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Good. wanted to shout out and give a thanks out to the GCAC. I mean, we thank you guys before every performance, but really, you definitely help our mission be accomplished in the city. And one of the other things I kind of wanted to point out is, you know, because of your continued support, you're able to keep the cost of ticket prices down for our audiences, which is one of those sneaky things that I don't think audiences necessarily remember when they're coming in paying only $10 to $15 at the door or what have you. You know, it could be $20 to $50 at the door to make our mission possible. And the other thing is, you know, since we rent out our space to up-and-coming groups, it really helps us keep the price of rentals down low. So that way, you know, maybe a performance group that is just getting off the, you know, off their feet, possibly with their first performance, that doesn't have an audience, you know, set aside that's going to come out and certainly support them. We can kind of, you know, help support them because we're not relying on them to, you know, help us make our monthly bills or what have you. You know, we've got the GCAC there to help support us, and therefore can sort of in turn support up-and-coming groups and whatnot. So
Brendan,
I want to shout out that thing.
Brendan, what has been Mad Lab's journey to from its beginnings? Give me like a very, very abbreviated version of your company history from your beginnings here in town to where you are now. Be brief,
yeah.
but be, you know, pithy.
Honestly, I would say that we started out maybe it's about 13 years ago. It was two guys, and they literally started with a theater project in the basement of a hair salon. And then we ended up getting a space downtown. Well, it's kind of in the Discovery District, and we lived there for about 10 years or so. And just recently, we purchased our own building farther in town off of 3rd, pretty much right where Summit turns into 3rd downtown. And so now we are an established group with an ownership of a building and going through the rehab of basically having our own building. So it's been kind of a long road, but it's certainly been an upward climb. So.
That's very good. Thank you, Brendan. That's impressive that they've gone from 13 years from you know, a hair salon to owning their own property on the way to downtown. That's pretty good.
And as Brendan said, I can attest that they are very, very supportive, Mad Lab, to other theater groups in the city, the emerging theater groups that get advice from Mad Labs that are able to use that facility at a cost structure that's more attractive than other space in the city. Andy Batt and that board has done a terrific job in developing not only that theater company, but that resource for other theater companies in the community.
292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation with Tim Veach, with Steve Geyer, and with Milt Boffman talking about arts and culture, the business of arts and culture, and the arts of arts and culture in Central Ohio. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. I like to ask this question, particularly when I have some people who are new to the program. So I'll start with Steve, and then we'll do a little round robin. What kind of a city is this? What kind of an area is this to be an artist?
I love it.
Okay.
I would not be here if it weren't such a fabulous city to do art in. You know, we've had lots of opportunities to move over the years, move away and just do something completely different, meaningful opportunities. It never really was a serious consideration. Starting in Columbus was actually quite simple in that finding people willing to take a chance was easy. There are so many different types in this city, so much diversity in the city that it's quite simple, no matter what you're doing, what you're describing as your art, to find some sort of audience. And they're not just any old audience. People in Columbus, in my experience, tend to be extraordinarily loyal. They are perfectly willing to accept that you might fall down once in a while. They'll be there to help pick you up, and they'll still come back the next time in hopes that it'll be a better effort or whatever. That kind of loyalty goes beyond any experience that I've had in the past. In addition to that, there is a civility in this city that's unique. We do not ever have the struggle internally that I've sensed and worked with and been a party to many, many times in the past with other theatrical organizations or rock and roll bands or whatever it might be. It's a city where people really believe that the group is a more powerful unit than the individual, and they are willing to subvert some portion of their personality to making the greater good happen.
To keep the drama on stage, which is kind of
well
nice.
Said. Yes, that's right.
How about you, Tim?
Well, there's a reason that Columbus Dance Theater is called Columbus Dance Theater and not Tim Beach Dance Company. I mean, I had that decision to make when I founded the organization. And similarly, I really believe that the community together is what makes art happen in the town, and that there are so many people interested in working with each other, which is fantastic. I mean, I have the benefit of working with great musicians and with actors and artists and all these different people from our community and actually also coming to the community. I mean, my wife and I left New York City. We looked for a community that had a cultural life. That was what we were interested in when I was seeking to leave New York. And so Columbus seemed like a great place. It had a lot going on. And I mean, like right now in my own artistic life here, I'm getting to direct the next opera and I'm working on a musical for Iowa Wesleyan. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for artists here to expand what they're doing into many avenues in the community because people are open and willing. I mean, they want to work together, which is exciting.
And how about you, Milt? What kind of a city is this for the arts? Because you really are able to take the temperature by virtue of your job.
Well, I think Steve has really hit it on the head, as has Tim. I think I hate to say it's a city that's easy for an artist because it's not easy to be an artist. It is a city that tries to support artists, and it has, through the diversity and the openness of the city, I think been a great incubator for arts groups. I do think we're too modest about it, and I've been a resident of Columbus for over 20 years, and frankly, just in probably the last 5 years, have been more attuned to the arts world and cultural world in Columbus. But I think we don't fully appreciate what we have here, and we don't pump ourselves up maybe enough about some of the really great resources we've got in Columbus and the great talent we have in Columbus.
Do all of you find people coming into Columbus, moving here because they want to work as artists? Do you in your work, are you meeting people who maybe came here a year ago, two years ago?
I do, but it's the nature of what I do. I bring in artists who move to Columbus. They don't just come in for a short term or a short season.
Yeah, but something brought them here. Something, if they're artists, if they want to work on stage or in a gallery, that something brought them here.
That's absolutely right. There is a reputation. I think it's small, Milt. You're right about that. But I think there is a reputation out there that Columbus is the kind of extraordinarily diverse environment where an artist can be happy. They can be creative, and they can trust that someone is going to care about that creativity. And that's relatively unique.
I believe that, you know, CDT has brought in many artists to the community who've decided to stay. And they wouldn't stay if they didn't like it here. I mean, regardless of the dancing or, you know, the art making, if you really detest where you live, you're going to leave. But we have lots of people that work for us that, you know, came from other places from all around the country. And they stay in Columbus and they love it here. So there's a lot to be said for that.
There's another side to this, too, I think. Christopher, I talk to a lot of people who are not necessarily artists but are interested in the arts that have moved to Columbus from New York or Boston or Atlanta, and they're astounded by the diversity and the breadth and the depth of what's available in Columbus and easily available in Columbus, which I think is a really wonderful resource for the city.
I think also collaboration, the kind of collaboration that we talk about here, might be easier in a city this size, and I mean that in a complimentary way. Mm-hmm. I don't imagine collaboration is easy in a place like New York or Atlanta or Boston. People, I think, are much more territorial because it's just that much more expensive to function there. That you might need more. Maybe I'm wrong. It's just an impression.
I agree that there's an expense issue there and that there's a certain kind of territoriality. But, you know, I think in Columbus there's also a fearlessness. There's this general attitude in the arts community here where people are secure. We don't have to constantly thump ourselves on the chest and say, I'm better than you. It's much more about a belief, again, in that team that if we can all succeed in the arts, everybody wins. And I think it's a fairly rare point of view.
Tim, a lot of people, when they hear the term dance, they think ballet.
Right.
Unless they become dance aficionados, they think ballet. Mm-hmm. There's a very fine ballet company in Columbus.
Absolutely.
OSU has a lot of great programs in dance, a lot of modern dance things. Did you have to carve a different niche for yourself and do a little education for the public about what I, Tim, and my company is doing is a little different than everybody else is doing?
I think so. I mean, I think that's true whenever you start something new. And because with Ballet Met and Ohio State, there are two very, you know, wonderful longstanding institutional dance organizations that the city has. And CDT had to sort of define itself in terms of its niche in the middle of all of that, which took a few years. And I think people were going, is this a ballet company? Is this a modern dance company? And frankly, part of what's a little bit different about it is I have kind of a dance theater approach to the work, which combines multiple elements, ballet, modern dance, theater. And those elements coming together, it's almost a little bit more of a European model. And so it took us a little bit of time to sort of find our voice. And now I think a lot of our voice centers around theatrically based work that has a ballet vocabulary, but then also is highly collaborative and influenced by many different ideas coming together, be it collaboration in music, collaboration in art making. It's highly collaborative work.
So somebody coming to one of your productions comes to expect dance and.
It's
is that
usually,
fair to say?
Absolutely, dance and.
How about you, Steve, for people going to Shadowbox? Are they first of all, you do a fair amount of new work. Is that right?
Most of what we do is new work.
I would think so. So are people coming to see you? There's a trust issue there. I mean, you have the reputation of being cutting edge, getting to be a dated, but you know, you're doing new things. I don't know what I'm going to see when I come to Shadowbox. I know there's going to be a certain level of quality, but I don't know much more than that. Is that easy for an audience? Is it easy to attract an audience given that?
No, it's the worst possible scenario. It's complete foolishness. I don't know why we ever did it. But the truth of the matter is, of course, we do it because we're passionate about it. It's what we really love. It's why it's okay to work ridiculous hours for no money. On the other side of that, though, what it does point out again is that we have an audience in Columbus that is okay with seeing completely untested, untried, unknown. Yes, you can produce guys and dolls all day and do a great job with it, and people know what they're getting. Or you can do completely new things. And in this city, they're very supportive of that. They're perfectly willing to come and take a chance if you have the reputation for quality. Once you've established that, they're going to come.
Well, let me turn it around a little bit. What is missing in Columbus? We have all kinds of theater. We have all kinds of dance. We have opera. We have symphony. We have ballet. We have galleries. We have a museum. We have Pro Musica, which does new works for the concert hall, which is really hard to get that off. Mm-hmm. What would you like to see? What do we need, Milt?
Well, that's a tough one. I do think one dimension that is probably a little bit under the radar is film and video in Columbus. There's a very, very strong base of artists doing film and video work in the community. And I can say just personally, that has always been very much under my radar. There's a really good International Columbus Film Festival that has been going on for, I think, 57 years, something just hard to imagine. And I think that's one medium that I'm not sure has gotten the same level of attention that others have. But after that, I'm a little hard-pressed to think of other areas that need more attention.
What about the Wexner Center? What's their role in the community? Because they're known for cutting edge work in all kinds of disciplines. That's why they exist, is my understanding. Do they inform, help, encourage by what they do, what you all do, or is it a separate apples and oranges kind of
thing? Oh, I think it's a treasure for Columbus. With all due respect to my colleagues here, it's a nationally recognized, very important center for arts and culture, and we're very fortunate to have it in Columbus, and they do some just terrific programming and have done it, in a very aggressive manner.
Well, I think they can be very daring. I think they have the funding and the underwriting to be able to bring in things.
They can afford it.
That are, really kind of leading the way on the edge of art making internationally, and that's a huge blessing for the city.
So, I'm wondering if they are able to really set the tone for the kind of new work and the kind of edgy work that a lot of people like to see and a lot of people like to do. I mean, Guys and Dolls is wonderful. We all did it in high school and we all love it. But, why not do something that we haven't seen or heard before?
Right. I think also the Wexner Center has a wonderful opportunity to be expressive in ways that the rest of us can't. Because their funding is so thorough and complete, they can take chances on work that would perhaps not be particularly palatable to a paying audience, or a large paying audience at least. And it's okay. And that's great because that just broadens the variety of options within the community. If there was anything that I'd love to see in the community, it'd be more places like the Wexner Center that could do right. even more work at that level, that sort of extreme risk-taking.
What do you think of this argument? I think you just made it, but I think part of the function of the arts in any discipline is to be provocative.
Couldn't agree more.
And sometimes people get a little leery of that. I mean, if I had to pay the bills, I'd be leery too, to be honest with you. But I think sometimes it's to get the conversation going, maybe to get a little bit of passion out from the audience.
The challenge with being provocative is encouraging an audience to participate. You know, you can be the most provocative artist in the world, and if only two people see what you've done, you haven't really created much conversation.
Right.
If you can find that kind of edge where you can be provocative and yet attract an audience, then you can really get the conversation started.
I think the key is quality, though. I mean, I think that provocative art can be terrific if it's good art. Just throwing one's, inner turmoil out there isn't always necessarily great art making. So I think that a sensitivity to craft, a sensitivity to the viewpoint of the audience, how are they perceiving this work? I think that's a critical part of art making.
But that's something else that I think is unique to Columbus in my experience, is that the audience here, the paying customers, are willing to be provoked. I think they are willing to participate and to jump in with it. Hold that thought. We're going to come back in 90 seconds with more of this conversation with Tim Veach of the Columbus Dance Theater, Steve Geyer, the executive producer of Shadowbox, and Milt Boffman, who is the interim executive director of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. I'm Christopher Purdy. Back in 90 seconds.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin, and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on today's edition of Fresh Air, a concert and conversation with Doc Watson, the legendary flat-picking, Grammy-winning country music player. That discussion begins on Fresh Air at noon, right here on WOSU 820. Are you hungry for more than just headlines and short sound bites about our community? Watch Columbus on the Record for in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis of the issues and stories affecting Central Ohio. Columbus on the Record is on tonight at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for WOSU comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment consultants, helping clients achieve financial independence through professional planning at sherringtongroup.com.
77 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today, a chance of rain, maybe a thunderstorm, and a high right around 78. Partly cloudy tonight and a low of 53 degrees. Some sunshine for Saturday and a high of 70. And looking ahead to Sunday, sunny on Sunday and a high of 73. All Sides Weekend continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
We are back for All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy. Give us a call. Join the conversation, 292-8513. By all means, call us, but we're having a great time. Anyway, you can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Milt Boffman is the interim executive director of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Tim Veach is the founder and artistic director of the Columbus Dance Theater. And Steve Geyer, who comes here for the first time today, and thank you very much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
On this Labor Day weekend, is the founder and executive producer of Shadowbox, now in two locations at Easton and in Newport, Kentucky. I asked you earlier. I didn't give you a chance to answer. What happened? You're moving geographically as well.
Well, we had an opportunity to expand and test another market. And when we were asked to move down there, it didn't require us to close what we were doing here in Columbus. So that made it something we were willing to consider. And then after lots of negotiation, we finally found a deal that seemed to make sense. So we've had a troupe working down in what we call the Greater Cincinnati area.
Well, sure.
Right across from the ballparks there on the river. And it's been a great operation. It has put another 30 performers to work. And it has been very successful for us. This is our 10th year down there, and I'm very pleased with what's happened.
So are you driving back and forth a lot? Is that what's happening? Or
yes.
Yes.
I'm tired of that drive.
Ask a stupid question.
They need a train answer. They're going to build, right?
No, the train would be awesome.
That's going to be wonderful. During the break, we were talking about a couple of smaller theater companies that have lately exploded. One of them is Available Light.
Right.
They are doing, I think it's still running, Sondheim's Merrily Be Rolling
Right.
Along.
And that's, again, I think we were talking about risk-taking earlier. My understanding, Stephen Sondheim's only major flop. And it's a play that my wife and I went to last Saturday night to a full house. I think this might be the last weekend it's running. But a terrific show with a big cast and a large musical support. But again, risk taking, and it shows that audiences are willing to take risks also, which is a point that Steve and Tim have made, and a lot of fun too.
So why now? Why did Available Light, that's been sort of trying to break through for the last couple of years, and there's some very good people involved with that, why all of a sudden in the middle of a hot summer did they hit with a Stephen Sondheim flop?
Yeah. No, I know. You're going to have to ask them, I think.
Okay.
You have to ask Matt Slabaugh.
I mean, the reviews have been fantastic.
Oh, the reviews have been great.
Fantastic.
Exactly.
And I went the other night and couldn't get in, so I haven't
really
seen it yet because, for all the best reasons, it was sold out and they said, you know, goodbye. Try us again another time.
And, you know, they have pay what you want.
Yes.
And so you can go in, pay what you want. And then they have available, as you leave the theater, the opportunity, if you've enjoyed it and you think you should pay a little more, you've got that option.
They should pass the hat at the intermission and shame people into paying more, I think. 292-8513. If you are an artist working in Columbus, I'd love to know what brought you here and what your life is going on right now. Also, you can send an email to allsides@wosu.org, 292-8513. Or if you're an audience member, what are you seeing and hearing now? What would you like to see and hear that maybe you haven't lately? Although, as we're talking about, the variety is so intense. I mean, if you're paying attention at all, you probably would get every kind of need.
There's a lot going on here all the time. And I think that that's the great thing, and it's also a challenge and how to cut through. And GCAC has a good resource.
ColumbusArts.com.
Right, exactly. That's actually a great resource for knowing what's going on. Back to the Matt Slabaugh thing a little bit and the success there.
Fantastic.
They've done a lot of shows at CDT, you know, used our space, and especially when they're first starting. And it was very evident right away. He's an artist, you know. He's an artist. He wants to do his perspective on art making. And we, as we said in the conversation earlier, if that's your passion, if that's what you're going to do, you're going to find a way to make it cut through and do it. And so part of it's just stick-to-it-ness, you know, keeping going. Artists do. That's what they do. And so that
I happen to know, because I know you a little bit, that you're married, you have family, and have there been nights when you sat there with the mortgage book in your face and thinking, you know, my God, what am I going to do?
Absolutely
Never, not once, right.
Yeah. My wife's listening. She's laughing right now.
Yeah,
the financial struggle of running an arts organization is dramatic. I mean, it is big. It is all the time. It never goes away. I think after a certain amount of time, you get used to riding the horse. I mean, you kind of go, okay, right, there's no money today, and tomorrow there will be. So that's how I've had to sort of zen my way through it. But and also, I think once you've been around a little while, you kind of know that the support is out there and that you do have people behind you, under you, believing in you, and, you know, backing what you do, including GCAC, actually.
Take me through your process briefly about developing a new work, Steve. I'm sure it just begins with an idea. Does it begin with just talking with other people, bouncing things around? What's the process of getting that idea onto the stage?
You know, there are two kinds of new work at Shadowbox. There's the normal shows that we do, the 5 sketch comedy and rock and roll shows that we do every year. That is a schedule. We know it's coming. We know it has to be done. So it's a job. We sit down and we write and we edit and we throw away and we start over. Lots and lots of process there where 8 or 9 different writers get together and spend enormous man hours writing and rewriting. When we're looking, however, at, for example, an original musical, where Back to the Garden has been a piece that's been extraordinarily successful for us, that retelling of the Woodstock experience was more a matter of passion. Thinking, you know what, I would love to tell this story. There's some astonishing music associated with it. let's get together and write this. And
were
that,
you alive?
I was. Kevin? Yeah, I was 14.
Very much, oh, okay. We're the same age then. Yeah. Okay, you were alive. Yeah,
I was very
Tim,
much
you weren't
alive.
But yeah.
You'd be surprised. I was alive.
I was. So we're the same age. Okay. So you kind of remembered that ethos, that sort of zeitgeist back then.
I'm proud to say that that's why I'm doing what I'm doing today.
Because
I wasn't there, but I was certainly heavily influenced.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments when I kind of looked out at the larger world and said, wow, I don't need to live in this small town frame of mind that I have. I can live in as big a world as I want to, and I can be a part of something like that someday. And that's exactly what I set out to do. And that's what I'm doing today. So, yeah, it had an enormous influence. And why it hadn't occurred to me earlier to write a piece like that is beyond me. But maybe it was because I didn't have the right team of people. You know, I have a phenomenal writer now in Jimmy Mack that was able to take that notion that, frankly, even I didn't come up with. Katie Seneca, my media relations director, came up with it. And he wrote a brilliant script. And then I have choreographers and vocal coaches and musicians that were able to truly bring it to life, and it's been astonishing for
us. How long does it take to get from idea to first night?
The best case scenario, I would say, is about 9 months, and that's
like
if
a
we're
baby.
Flying.
Okay. Yeah,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
A baby.
It
right.
felt a lot like that, too,
okay.
I'm sure. But there's also the reality, and I know that Tim can relate to this with String Machine, you're not ever really done. You right. kind of put it out there, and then you look at it and go, oh, shoot, I wish I would have done that. And if you have an opportunity, you do. You go back and make a change, and you keep tweaking, trying to raise that child into a nice, thoughtful adult.
Ethel Merman used to say in previews, call me Miss Birdseye, boys. I'm frozen. That's it. After a certain point, I don't learn any new material. Well, how about String Machine? How about a piece of yours that String Machine has garnered a fine reputation now? It keeps coming back because people
right.
want to see and hear it.
Right.
How did that develop?
Wow, that was a really interesting process with Charles Weatherby.
Yes.
And it was a thing where we were wanting to do a collaboration, and we had been talking to WSU TV, and they were opening that new space down there.
COSI, yeah.
At COSI Space. And so Charles and I literally, it was, you know, like what you think people do. We got together and had tea and sat in his studio and said, okay, dance and music, and what do they have in common? What's their difference? What links them? And then we started talking about, I said, well, you know, what about these instruments? And we started looking at the instruments, and they have strings on them. And he said, well, you know, there's this piece called String Machine by Frank Bennett, and let me play that for you. And we started listening to music, and then it all became about these strings. And I said, well, that's what you have. What if that attached to us? And then he looked at me sort of strangely. And then we started talking and rolling. And it was really one of those great brainstorming days, you know? I mean, that's what a gift, you know? That's what's the most fun, right?
There's your collaboration.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's when it's not all from you. Because then it's like having a child, right? Two people have a child because hopefully they bring the best of the two of themselves together and make this great thing. So that's what's so cool about collaborating, is that things happen you never dreamed of. And that's where that particular work came from. And to get to work with someone like Charles and the quartet is a gift.
Charles Weatherby is the concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra. He is the, I think, founder of the Carpe Diem String Quartet. He's first chair violinist, and he's a musician of many, many talents and profile here in the community. And he's been on the program too. So I'm glad to have that sort of shout out to that kind of a collaboration. Milt Baughman, here's a question about Greater Columbus Arts Council. Is it the function of an arts council that uses city money to sort of create the ethos, if you will, for what the arts will be in the city, or are you chicken or egg? Put it that way.
Well, I'm going to maybe duck that because I'm not sure how to answer the chicken or egg side of it. But we do feel we should be advocates for the arts, and the city has encouraged us in that regard through our contract with the city, which provides the bed tax funding that we then grant out to arts organizations. It's very clear that the city expects GCAC to promote the arts in the community and promote the arts the broadest possible way. And so we view that advocacy role as being a very important leg of our process.
How is it dealing with other, well, I won't say other bureaucracies because I don't want to use that word, but how is it dealing? I mean, you have to work very hard and walk several fine lines, I would think, in the course of your day-to-day
work? Well, we're very fortunate. The city, when they established our role as a grant-making organization, really we have an annual contract which states our objectives, but we do not get any pressure, any suggestions from city, the office of the mayor or city council about how to do our job. They look to us to be as professional as we can in our grant-making policy and our grant-making execution. And we know we appreciate that, and we view that as a very important stewardship.
My impression is that GCAC does not have to fight for its existence, which many other arts councils do around the country. But I don't see that happening here.
Well, I think we always have to fight for our existence, though.
Okay.
I mean, I think we have to show and prove to the community that we're an important aspect of the community, or an aspect of the community that's important. We have to every day remind ourselves that we're stewards of public funds. We have to remind ourselves every day that our role is to promote the arts in the city and the community, and to do everything we can to focus our energies along those lines.
I want to say that I really feel like there have been a lot of great changes at GCAC over the last 4 or 5 years that have really added a lot of support, not just financial, but there have been, in terms of grant writing process and things like that that we go through. I feel a lot of support there in terms of their willingness and helpfulness toward artists. And that organization is a key component to the success of artists in this town. I mean, I talk about that expanding dance company I have. That would not be the case without support from GCAC, and that's just the truth.
That kind of support, again, is another reason why people want to live here. They
exactly.
want to live and work here. So, I mean, it does. That's the chicken and the egg, yeah. and that works very, very nicely as well.
If you don't mind, one thing that the Steve's group has done, which with Into the Garden, was your show in German Village, which was really a free show for the city, and the proceeds were used when you passed the hat for the Actors Theater, which I thought was a really generous, very, very generous effort on the part of Shadowbox and for the community as a whole.
Thank you. It was, for us, an extraordinary opportunity to express what we love in a really public fashion and to reach out to audiences that perhaps have not had an opportunity to experience what Shadowbox is all about, or had a narrow view of what Shadowbox was all about, seeing only the sketch comedy and rock and roll. It was a wonderful, wonderful day. Estimates were around 4,000 people were there for the event, and it was just extraordinary. So much fun. Such a long day.
But it was, yes.
But it was
a hot day, too, as I remember.
It was, you know, at least it didn't rain. I was really blessed.
I was there for that, and that was a wonderful collaboration. To have you both there. And a shout out too to Actors Theater, because they do wonderful things in the city in Schiller Park all summer, and it is free, and the quality is very high. We have about 6 minutes left. If you'd like to call 292-8513, and we're going to have the most fun question is, what do you think you're going to be doing in the city in the next 5 years? And we have a call from Mary. Hi, Mary, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
And I would like to just comment on a collaboration. It was Tim Veach's A to Z, and it was with Carpe Diem, and it was last year, in 2010. But it was brilliant. He had the dancers learn 26 phrases, and the musicians learn 3 pieces, and then the audience got to pick how we wanted them to do it. And Tim, on his feet, was absolutely brilliant. He put together the most interesting dance, and the audience loved it. And I'm just hoping Tim will repeat that sometime.
It's in the plan, actually. We're not doing it this season, as we just did it, but it's actually on the schedule for next year. People really enjoyed that. It's kind of dangerous for me, but because
yes,
I could fall on my face,
I suppose.
The
last time you were here, people were calling and loving that as well.
Right.
So that's nice to hear, Mary. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And what Mary is commenting on, again, and we come back to collaboration, which seems to be the thread whenever we have these conversations about the arts anywhere. You got to work together. I think that's how you sort of pollinate new work, or you take a different view. I'm very interested because, Tim Veach, you have a project coming up. You're going to be directing for Opera Columbus a Kurt Weill Brecht evening in the Lincoln Theater,
which
I think is great. You're in the Lincoln Theater.
I love that theater.
And this, it's not necessarily out of the box for you, but it's something a little different. And what are you going to bring to that?
A lot of movement,
yeah.
A lot of visual aspects. The evening is sort of a review nature of, you know, kind of a travelogue through his life. And samples of all kinds of his music, although sort of strung together in my mind as the director about sort of Man Without a Country. I mean, he was someone who had to leave several places he loved and then ended up throughout that process making this incredible music and music that was unique to him. I mean, I think a unique voice, you hear that music and you know it's Weill. And what's so fantastic is CDT has done dancing in the operas for years now. We provide the dancers and I choreographed for Opera Columbus for many years. And this is going to be an even more sort of integrated, expanded rendering of that collaborative nature. And I'm very, very, very excited about it. It's the first weekend there of October.
The 7th and 8th of October.
Correct.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And we'll have it on our website, WOSU.org. Right. This is going to be Opera Columbus's opening, season opener, a Kurt Weill, Bertolt Brecht evening in the Lincoln Theater. We have an email from Bob who says, I think we need an international festival that shines a spotlight on Columbus for a week, the way that the Humana Play Festival does in Louisville or the Fringe in Scotland. I like the way you think, Bob. How about that? Do you think that's feasible? Well, we have the Arts Festival in June.
Well,
that's
do.
A huge deal.
And I think the other thing that's coming up will be the in 2012, the Bicentennial Celebration. And I know there are a number of committees that have been set up to help organize that. And ideas like that, I think, are going to be sought. And would be something like that could be a lot of fun.
Do we have any idea at all of how that Bicentennial Celebration is going to look apropos of the arts?
The arts are certainly a big component of it.
Right.
And at this stage, some of the early planning and strategy is being developed around that. But the arts are going to take a very prominent role in that celebration.
Many years ago, I got to perform for the Bicentennial of Australia. I danced in a dance company in Chicago that was commissioned to go and do a commission in Brisbane. And they built this incredible stage in the middle of the river. They had giant nets off the front of it in case the performers would fall into the river. And you had to take a boat to get out to it. Then you got there. It was like its own little city, this stage out in the middle of the river. And then people sat on the hillside, and there were 12,000 people. And they all sat there, and one dance company after another from all over the world came in and performed. And so maybe that's our model. You know, we built this cool stage.
Let's not forget, we all love the Buckeyes and things, but the arts are another way to make community because they do physically, literally bring people together. And that's what community is. And I think that's a role for everybody in this room, on this side of the table, to be a part of. So I think that Bicentennial Celebration could be very exciting, and I'm sure the conversation's
absolutely
going on. We'll have you back, and I'll pump you and make you spill your guts about the secrets for that. I'm Christopher Purdy. Today we are talking about the arts and culture on today's edition of All Sides Weekend. My guests have been Steve Geyer, the executive producer of Shadowbox in two cities now, Newport, Kentucky, Greater Cincinnati, and at Easton. Thank you very much, Steve, for being here today.
It was my pleasure.
Hope you'll come back. Tim Veach, the executive director, artistic director, guru star of the Columbus Dance Theater, one of 13 or 14 artists there now in the company, going all kinds of collaboration and working with Opera Columbus. You're probably in rehearsal now for the – or getting there
we're,
for the
– Boy, we're gearing up.
For the Kurt Weill Bertolt Brecht evening at the Lincoln Theater.
Yes.
And Milt Boffman is the dad of the arts in Columbus. He is the – he'll never come back on the show again, I swear. He is the interim executive director of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. I thank you all for joining us today. Have a safe and happy Labor Day weekend. Thank you all for listening. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Side Weekend, and this is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.